Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, June 9th, 2022. Today on The Ether, the Regenerati News Hour, Regen Registry and Science Team AMA. Let's take a listen.
All right, folks. Well, I think we're ready to get started. Welcome to our Regenerati News Hour, Regen Network. Today we're going to be doing a Regen Registry and Science Team Ask Me Anything with Rebecca Harmon and Sam Bennett. Rebecca, feel free to hop in and introduce yourself and kick us off.
Maybe Becca's having mic issues. Cool. Well, yeah, thanks, Emily, for hosting this, and thanks, everyone, for coming. Today, we wanted to share a bit on what's moving on the science and registry side of things, because we recognize that, we're doing a lot and don't always have the opportunity to showcase our work. So we wanted to spend the first little bit of this call just sharing a little bit about what's been moving on our end. On the science side, you know, what methodologies we're developing. Our lead scientist, Giselle Boomen, just got back from Europe, where she was at a European Space Agency conference and has some pretty great updates there. And then I wanted to share a little bit about what we're doing with the registry. The Regen Registry Guide, and start to talk about the decentralization of the registry. And then we wanted to open it up for just anyone in the community to ask questions and kind of have a more casual conversation and see where things go. So, Becca, are you back?
I'm back. Mic troubles. Nice. Yeah. Hey, everybody. Afternoon, morning, evening. It's good to see everybody here. I don't know how you feel, Sam, but I would kind of love to have a human moment to just say hey and share what that I'm hanging out with my daughter this morning and setting her up on science experiments. It's like all of us behind all this region work are just all, you know, humans in our own right. So, Sam. How are you? How are you human this morning? Do you make a cup of coffee yet?
Yeah, I did make my coffee. I might get a few cups in, so. Yeah.
Well, always nice to pause. And I feel like we've been really excited to have some carved out space to share what's been going on. Because is anyone, any of you in the audience that connects with us, you know that we're really busy, but it's good to be able to share what we're busy with and how the current work of registry and science feeds into, you know, the building of an eco credit minting platform and how our work is so much on the community side and on the supply side and on the what is an eco credit and how do you create one and how is it verified and how is it composable. So it's nice to pause and share, kind of come up for air. So I feel like we'll do some like round robins about things that are current right now. Sam, do you want to share about the ESA symposium to kind of start out on the science side of things with Giselle's trip?
Yeah, definitely. And so for those in the audience that are wondering why Giselle isn't here, she's actually visiting a farm down in Argentina right now. Where a bunch of, you know, different people interested in rotational grazing are designing soil sampling plans. So she unfortunately couldn't make it. And hopefully in the future, we're going to have her and Ned, also from the science team, share a little bit more about their work. But she did, you know, send us a message about things that she wanted to share, specifically with her work on the Carbon Plus grasslands. So to provide a little bit of background for those that are less familiar, the Carbon Plus Grasslands is the first methodology that we had developed in the regen ecosystem. And it was focused on measuring soil carbon in regenerative grazing systems, in grassland systems. And so we had our first pilot project down in Australia with this group Impact Ag that started these practices in 2017. And it was a really cool opportunity for us to test out a new method to measure soil carbon using remote sensing data. And so essentially what we were doing is we were taking Sentinel-2 satellite images, which are hyperspectral in the hyperspectral wavelengths, and cross-referencing them with ground truth data or soil samples that were collected to see if we could find correlations between the remote sensing data and what's happening on the ground, and using that as a means to kind of interpolate what soil carbon would be at unsampled locations. And so, you know, Giselle's been working on this for the last few years, and it's finally gotten to the point where, it's gone through a few iterations of upgrades, and it's being peer reviewed in the next month or two. And to share her work, Giselle actually went to the European Space Agency Living Planet Symposium in Bonn, Germany, and she had an opportunity to meet with a few other groups working on similar lines of work in measuring, you know, soil carbon using remote sensing, which was really exciting for her. So, you know, there's this group Sequana that's been doing that. Tom Hengel, who's one of the kind of lead digital soil mapping minds in the world, was also there. And it sounds like they had a really great time just kind of talking about their work, sharing data, better understanding how we could work together. She came back with, you know, lots of excitement. There's interest in testing this method in other areas of the world, starting to explore what it might look like to use more, other types of remote sensing data, like planet data, to see if it works there, and really, you know, focus in on understanding why correlations exist between remote sensing data and soil carbon data, because it's still kind of an unknown. We know it works. We've seen it be successful in quite a few areas, but the actual relationship is still a little bit less defined. So that was kind of the updates that she had to share. It also ties in with one of another project she's working on called the Regen Lands Map, which essentially allows us to, her thoughts are, you know, given a certain location in the world and a certain land management practice, you could start to pull in, region-specific data or academic literature to help guide sequestration estimates for what you might be able to do in your area. So if you were working in Argentina, you could create a little map of, your property, and pulling from regional data, it would be able to tell you what the general sequestration rates are for that kind of practice. And it sounds like she has a lot to think about there, especially post-symposium. So I don't know, Becca, did I miss anything?
I think you covered it. I mean, I think the only other exciting result of that time was being able to really socialize our work at Regen and our values and the mission that we have, and that a lot of these folks that are working deeply on the science part of it really connected to that mission. I feel like it's such a testament to being able to show up in person and make those connections, and a testament to like the validity of our work and our mission, that it's appealing to a lot of these different experts because it really has a lot of potential impact. So I think she was super jazzed and we were super jazzed, and it's a really good lead in because that methodology, Carbon Plus Grasslands, is going through peer review. So it's been, as Sam mentioned, it's going through, there's some rounds of upgrades getting it ready for that process. But being able to really legitimize, you know, that methodology among the science community is a really important step. You know, if we're asking that of other methodologies, then we certainly need to do that in our own right. So this sets a really great tone for that process that we're initiating in June. And for everybody here, we are going to be having a public comment period for that methodology after the peer review. So everyone is welcome. It's going to be dropped on Discord and probably elsewhere. And it'll be a time to I think, not just assess the methodology, but to look at how a peer review process can be different. How, you know, we're thinking about the peers as not just expert scientists, but we're also thinking about peers as those who would be applying this method, people that are on the ground, people that are going to be using it themselves. So I'm really excited for that. I think we're all looking forward to that process in and of itself, and the kind of the ushering of a community around that methodology. So that's something that Region Science, the science team, is really working on shepherding through the process. And that will be the first of many methodologies that will kind of run through our peer review process. So we really look forward to engaging a lot of different actors and experts in the space through the methodology review process and having it be really public and transparent. So look forward to that. And really, that's all of this is it really all pieces together quite beautifully, because between being in a symposium and socializing the methodology and having that go through peer review, and then the work with the Region Lands Global Sequestration Map, all of this really funnels into projects, to producing eco credits. And so what this means is when the methodology is done with peer review, then projects can really start moving, and that methodology can be even more available to the community as an open source method to adopt and use. So we've got quite a few projects, grazing projects in the pipeline that are, I would say, chomping at the bit to get moving, to start with baselining and really like generating these credits. So I feel like this next year is a pretty big year for the registry and science teams to bring to life all of what we've been working towards for so long. So I'm particularly excited about Region Lands because a lot of my early work with R&D was with land stewards, and that's a huge need to be able to like predict potential sequestration based on your practices, so you feel confident about a project. So that's a really awesome initiative that we've got moving.
And Becca, where is the peer review process live? Is that available?
It is, Sam. I'm so glad that you asked. Should I tell everyone where that lives?
Yeah.
So we have been also quite busy, like head in the sand, working on our program guide or the registry guide. And that guide lives on GitBook. And we'll even be sharing that out, and we'll have to tweet about it. And that is going to be, instead of like a one size fits all registry, this is really a guide, like guardrails to innovate within. So the first iterations of the guide are including kind of like an introduction to the registry and the methodology development process, which includes peer review and kind of the steps like internal review and then peer review and then public comment. And then the next chapters will be on project development. And we're really asking ourselves a lot of deep questions about how to stay really true to our goal with the registry of allowing for creativity and plurality, while also having, you know, rigorous credits being produced. So we are really jazzed and look forward to sharing it.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I brought that up because I think that this is a really good segue into a lot of what we've been working on on the registry side of things. And so, you know, when I mentioned, you know, where does this all live? Where does our registry guide live? If you go to library.regen.network, that's our publicly available guide to how to engage with Regen Registry. It will eventually include, you know, our methodology library and our credit class library and all the other material that people would need to really be able to engage in, you know, developing eco credits or getting their projects on chain. And so I guess, you know, to provide a little bit of like history on kind of the evolution of Regen Registry, I think it's really important to look back at, you know, where we were this time last year. And so, you know, this time last year, Regen Registry was operating very similarly to, you know, some of the legacy registries like Vera or Gold Standard, where at a program level, we were outlining kind of the rules and requirements by which projects should be developed and credits should be issued. So we had a program-wide standard for, you know, project development, for monitoring, for verification. And, you know, that was kind of a very early on iteration. And after talking with a lot of the people that we actually were trying to work with and serve, we realized that kind of this top-down approach didn't really make sense. You know, we're working with people in Cambodia, in Australia, and South America, and creating a you know, program-wide set of rules and requirements just didn't really fit because it didn't accommodate for financial constraints, political conditions, access to scientific resources, or serve the needs of people that might not be interested in doing things like carbon credits. And so, you know, over the last maybe 6 months, we've been kind of redesigning how to engage with Regen Registry by adapting our program guide to be more of a framework by which people can develop their own projects and set their own standards. And so with that in mind, we've been rewriting the program guide over the last month and a half or so, such that at a program level, there's no set of rules and requirements of how you should be engaging in Regen Registry. Because we really believe that it's important that local communities are setting the standards and governing the standards for how projects should be developed and how credits should be issued. And so, you know, if you go to the library.regen.network, you can see what we've published so far in this new version of the guide. And kind of by the end of June, we really hope to have an MVP, you know, proposal of, hey, this is, you know, the Regen Registry guide. We would like to adopt this, you know, into our ecosystem. And over time, we want to invite the community to help upgrade this guide such that, you know, it can be a community governed standard and we're not the only ones really leading this charge. So
and I feel like the thinking about like what the guide represents for the registry and like for the community that wants to engage, it's following along this thread of having the registry be really self-serve. It's really the only way that we're going to be able to achieve the level of, you know, really the bottleneck of coordination and activation around any, you know, any project, anyone who wants to build and create. We are a small team and we're not going to be able to do that. So in order to allow for all of that freedom and creation, we need to have that composability from the very beginning, and have things be as self-serve as possible. And that comes, I think that'll really evolve a lot over time. So right now, focusing on like one of the big differentiations that we make within registry is like methodologies and credit classes. So normally, in other registries, you would kind of conceive of that as being a one-to-one relationship, where the eligibility of using a certain methodology is within that methodology itself. And so what that means is that for someone who maybe it checks a couple of the boxes, maybe it's the same ecosystem and production system, but maybe not the same land area size or something like that doesn't fit perfectly, that means that that methodology isn't available to you. Whereas instead, we're taking an approach that is outlined in the registry guide, that the methodology itself will not include eligibility. That's something that lies in the credit class itself. So that you could use multiple methodologies, you know, with a particular credit class that has eligibility requirements that suits the needs of those projects. So again, composability and self-serve and like freedom and innovation are really the cornerstones of all of this work. And knowing that if it's what we mean by like decentralization, this is community driven, and this is community driven science, community driven registry. That's the goal of having kind of a registry as DAO. And I'm sure that everyone here in the room can see the challenges ahead of bridging between Web 2 and Web 3 and on-chain and off-chain. But being on the registry side of things, you know, like these early decisions and kind of how we're architecting it, I think is going to lead to so much potential that we can't really even imagine now.
Yeah, totally. And I guess this kind of like bridges into, you know, the idea of like a decentralized registry and a decentralized registry program. And so, you know, how we've been thinking about kind of the first steps in this process is as we're getting close to finishing this first program guide, you know, we want to open up, you know, the creation and evolution of the guide and the registry program to be community governed such that we're not the only ones, you know, making these decisions, which, you know, early on is what's happening. But, you know, so with that in mind, kind of what we're thinking right now and what we really hope to engage the community in is in releasing this first version of the program guide, we want to, you know, have a essentially governance proposal around, you know, the adoption of this guide saying, hey, this is the MVP. This is what the internal region network team created. And this is like the foundation for what will become a community written guide. And so, you know, in the next few months, we hope to create a governance proposal by which the entire network can essentially adopt this guide as the first version, and then talk about pathways by which different stakeholders or different people in our community can start to contribute to that guide or to, you know, creating individual credit classes or methodologies and what that might look like. So that's kind of what's on the horizon with, you know, our guide and the standards. And yeah,
I feel like,
go for it.
Well, I feel like a nice way to move this from here is to say, no matter what guidelines we put out there, no matter how easy of a process we try to create, we fully recognize that the same barriers to entry exist for region projects as they do for other projects. And a lot of those barriers exist around financing a project and getting something off the ground in the initial stages. And speaking to the valley of death that Neil Stockman articulated so well, and we fully understand that need. And so something cool that came out of our team getting together in Seattle was an idea of bringing projects on chain before crediting terms. And that being a way to really seed projects with potential funding, getting them instead of waiting in this limbo of like, I'm waiting on a methodology or I'm waiting on credits to be issued or I'm waiting. That they're able to kind of participate early. So Sam, would you want to share some more on that?
Yeah, totally. So like Becca mentioned, we had a kind of product strategy retreat in Seattle after the ReFi Summit. And we were really talking about, you know, kind of what people can do now when it comes to kind of like more technical functionality in engaging with Regen Ledger. Because right now, you know, the only things that we really have are, you know, kind of the eco credit module, which allows people that have existing credit classes to mint new batches of credits, of course, but like, you know, associated with a regenerative practice, it often has to have monitoring reports, verification reports. It's a pretty lengthy process. And right now, you know, because these projects take so long to develop, there's not many tangible ways for people to engage in, you know, the more technical functionality of of regen ledger outside of actually having a credit class and being able to mint new batches. And so, you know, over the next quarter or two, we are going to be focusing on what we're calling the project and data weaving story and seed financing stories. And one of the main features of that is we want to start to explore and implement functionality around permissionless project creation, where anyone can come in and create a project on chain and tell their story and maybe use our data module to anchor data associated with that project on chain as a pathway both to showcase, you know, what they're doing. And we've had kind of initiatives around this, like our built on regen page. But we also really want to start to allow people to engage in seed financing, because one of the biggest barriers to entry for a lot of these projects is not having upfront capital to be able to implement their project, whether it's implementing the practice, whether it's collecting data to help guide future crediting events or whatever it might be. And so with this kind of permissionless project on chain story, we really want to allow people to showcase their work, have a wallet address that can engage in, like, you know, granting rounds or be tied to NFTs that are launched in Stargaze. And if you sell an NFT, you can get some of the money going back to your project. And so that's kind of another thing that's on the horizon for our next few quarters and something we're really excited about. I think that we've talked about a lot of things, and I've noticed a few people coming up to ask questions. And so because this isn't Ask Me Anything, I really want to make sure that we leave a lot of time for folks in the audience to ask questions. So, JHS, I know that you came up first. Do you have a question?
Hey, Sam. This is Jan. We met in Seattle.
Okay. Yeah.
So I just want to say that I'm so happy. Everything you've been talking about in this call is really aligning very nicely with what I've been seeing just even in the few weeks that I've been spending it very deeply in this space. And that is the fragmentation of projects is a problem. Right. Everybody is currently engaging with different Web3 platforms or other outside of Web3, all the projects, there's no central registry for projects. And if we had that, that would unlock a lot of good stuff. And the region registry was too confined, right? It said, if you want to come on board here, you need to adhere to certain things. And so I really applaud the decision to say we need to pick up projects much, much earlier. They don't need to be ready to issue eco credits to just be registered in terms of, hey, we exist, this is what we do. And so all of that is super cool. That I wanted to confirm a couple of things. So that also means the stages of the methodologies, right? So you know that the accepted methodologies are very much behind. People want to issue eco credits for blue carbon or all kinds of things that are not peer reviewed yet. What is the pipeline really looking like? Like, how many, just off the top of your head, what do you think, how many methodologies would have to be peer reviewed and approved to get how many more projects into the registry issuing eco credits?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that it really varies depending on the practice and the ease of implementation of certain regenerative practices. Because, you know, thinking about regenerative agriculture, you know, doing things like cover cropping or no-till practices, that's a lot easier to engage in than a blue carbon project, which is a little bit more challenging in terms of like implementation and data collection. And really being able to understand how certain practices are, affecting the ecology or, you know, ecosystem function in that area. Right now, we have about 30 methodologies in development. But of those, I would say about 15 are in very active development, where we will probably see them land on our registry in the next year. And those encompass quite a range of different regenerative practices, you know, we're about to, this group, Climate Farmers out in Germany, is about to release their methodology for regenerative agriculture practices. You know, we also have ones that are focused on keystone species protection. We have blue carbon methodologies. We have reforestation and agroforestry methodologies in the pipeline. And for each of these methodologies, they're actually operating in a very different part of the world, and all hoping to deploy them in kind of that region. So our agroforestry methodology right now is very specifically focused on pan-tropical regions and coffee systems, or coffee agroforestry systems in Colombia, for instance. And so, yeah, I think, you know, each of these will be kind of like deployed in those areas and hopefully unlock quite a few projects. But like Becca mentioned, you know, we really hope that the methodologies produced will be, you know, we're aiming for all of them to be open source. We want them to be public goods. We want people to be able to really quickly iterate on, you know, developing these methodologies and adapting them for kind of their local region. So
hopefully that's the other addition there is that with some of these methodologies, like the ones that deal with conservation ag practices, there's a significant body of data that supports the kind of legitimacy that those are in fact regenerative. And I think what we're seeing on the other end of the spectrum with some of these methodologies is that they're really in new data territory. So there's going to, I think, be a difference in lead time for some of these methods that are really in a new space and kind of generating fresh data as they're, you know, trying to get these methods off the ground. So it's cool because it's both ends of the spectrum. But certainly there's some limitations there.
Perfect. Just to finish my thought here is that, again, I think the thought that you already had of opening up to pretty much anybody, if this is an open sign up for any project, then even across the entire spectrum of projects, you have different quality. You could have, you're right, it becomes a reputation system in itself that a project can be endorsed, peer reviewed. And so I would say, let's open up the door to let anybody come on and say, this is who we are. This is what we're doing in terms of regenerative efforts. And then the pipeline develops from there that eventually leads to them adopting a methodology and actually producing eco credits, right?
Yeah, definitely. And this also kind of nests into with the data module, which we're going to be releasing at the end of June with Regen Ledger 4.0, which allows people to anchor and sign data on chain, meaning that they could put a piece of data or reference a piece of data on the blockchain and say, you know, whether it's like a PDF, whether it's soil samples, whether it's a piece of code used to, you know, in the MRV process, they could upload that data and attest to doing some sort of action with it. And, you know, with the data module, it also allows other people to come in and sign or make attestations about that data. So, you know, we really hope that, you know, with the creation of permissionless projects on chain, people could start uploading their data and it could be publicly available for, you know, other folks in the ecosystem to look at it, to attest to its validity, to use it to help guide, you know, methodology development and credit class development as a precursor to even issuing credit. So
that last question before I let others in the speak that are up here. That would allow, for example, let's say the region registry, especially if it becomes community owned based on a DAO, has the chance of becoming the registry for all region projects. You could go with your region ID for your project and still work on other platforms, be it Open Forest or Basin or EcoToken, wherever you want to go, and they would be able to still leverage the data module without the necessity to necessarily issue eco credits.
Yep. All of our, you know, all of our modules have open APIs. So the data module will have an open API that anyone can use. So, you know, if you're working with Open Forest Protocol but want your project shown on the Regen ecosystem, you should be able to do that. So,
Awesome.
Really going for interoperability.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
These are great, great questions.
Yeah. Let's see, Sev.
Yeah.
Good to see you here.
Hey, yeah, good to see you guys. Excited for this, and thank you so much for hosting this and putting this together. So I have a handful of questions here. First, could you define credit classes versus methodologies and like the relationship between the two a little bit more, kind of expand on that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's a few different threads here. There's one that focuses more on on-chain functionality and the other focuses on off-chain. And so I'll actually start with the latter and go back to my earlier point about how at a program level, we're not setting the rules and requirements by which projects should be developed or credits should be issued. Right. So we're not telling people what the verification requirements are, what the monitoring requirements are, what project eligibility requirements are, you know, what do you do in the case of early project termination? You know, at a program level, we're not dictating those kind of standards anymore. And so this is where kind of the credit class comes in, where because we're not doing that at a program level, there's a need to still have those rules nested somewhere. And so like Becca mentioned earlier, we want methodologies to really focus on kind of the scientific element of how are you measuring changes in ecological state in response to a certain land management practice. And so, you know, methodology should be how are we measuring carbon, like soil carbon in regenerative grazing systems? How are we using, you know, spatial interpolation in agroforestry to measure above ground biomass using, you know, X amount of forest inventory plots? And so it's really focused on the scientific element. And the credit class is focused on how do you use that methodology to actually get credits issued? How do you develop the project? And so the credit class is where we're nesting all of the more programmatic standards around project development. The methodology is where we're having the scientific element, like kind of the scientific component focused. And the reason that we're taking that approach is to allow for a little bit more modularity in terms of how methodologies could be used, because, you know, you could develop a really good soil carbon methodology that could be applicable in agroforestry systems, as well as regenerative grazing systems, as well as, you know, cover cropping system, like cover cropping practices. And so we want to make methodologies more modular so that they can plug into different credit classes. And so that's like kind of the how we're thinking about like separating out the science components from the programmatic rules and requirements. And then in terms of the on-chain stuff, you know, credit classes also are tied to, you know, the eco credit module, where on-chain you can create a new credit class and issue new credits from that credit class. And so, you know, the credit class PDF, the methodology, how are you using it, all of the rules and requirements, you know, that would live in our, you know, region registry library, and then you would use that in conjunction with the actual on-chain credit class to finally get your credits issued once you've gone through the MRV process and are ready to do so.
Thank you for that. So what is the difference between a verifier and a monitor?
So a monitor. So when you're developing a project, you know, you every X amount of years are going to be measuring how the ecosystem or, you know, region that you're operating in or how your project is responding to the land management practice you're implementing. And so every X amount of years, you want to say, cool, like we're doing, you know, regenerative grazing. We want to understand how much more soil carbon has been sequestered. What's the overall health of the soil, like maybe biodiversity metrics, things like that. And so every X amount of years, you're going to be monitoring that. You're going to be taking soil samples. You're going to be measuring changes and producing what's called a monitoring report. And so the person that's, you know, producing that could be the land steward. It could be a third party. But essentially, you know, they're going to be monitoring changes in ecological state. But, you know, in the space, it's really important that a third party checks that. And so that's where a verifier comes in. So a verifier is you know, the entity that is essentially double checking the work of the monitor to provide assurance and legitimacy that, you know, what changes they've seen are actually confirmed by a third party. And so, you know, the difference between a monitor and a verifier is that the monitor is usually doing the first round and the verifier is doing the second round. In legacy registry programs, usually whatever whatever number the verifier comes up with is the number that is going to be, you know, the number of credits produced. And usually they'll work together to, you know, kind of reconcile any differences they might see in coming up with a number for credit issuance.
That helps up a lot. Sorry, go ahead.
The interesting thing to think about too within those two roles is that instead of us being in a place of saying like this is how many monitoring rounds you need and this is when to verify, that decision making again is, you know, in the hands of those that are developing those projects and the credit classes. So that opens up more opportunity for like kind of like feasibility assessments, you know, because the monitoring rounds cost money and verification costs money. And the more you add those layers on, the less, you know, income ends up with the producers. So having that be more flexible and kind of owned by the people initiating those projects, the more I think we'll see projects be able to be developed because they'll just be like financially feasible at that point in time. And we have a goal of being able to have a community of monitoring service providers to be kind of available. And those will also, we've seen, be involved with methodology development because that layer of knowledge and information is necessary for that piece as well. What you got next, Ev?
This is super helpful. Thank you. So what is the relationship between project developers and land stewards? I know they can be like the same person, but like based on your experience with Carbon Plus Grasslands, like are they usually the same person? And
yeah, you know, it's interesting because there's definitely a lot of overlap. So you'll have, in certain cases, you'll have a land steward that is wanting to and is able to develop projects on their own. So they are their own project developer. And that's awesome. Like we want to empower land stewards to develop their own projects because more money ends up in their pocket. So like that's pretty ideal. The other scenario is when you have project developers that would be working with kind of like multiple land stewards that are really literate in a methodology and have kind of all the pieces lined up. So they would be supporting those land stewards through that product development process. And in some cases, it'll be the methodology developers that, you know, are developing projects from the methodology that they create. Or you'll also have project developers that are just like jazzed on regen and are wanting to, you know, like work with a methodology off the shelf. And so we're seeing a lot of those different cases come up. The goal being to allow for all of that, allow for each of those different situations. Having a project developer in these early days is really great because we just have kind of more troubleshooting capacity as we're working through project development in these first tries. But we're really excited. I mean, for Grasslands, I've been working with some land stewards for about a year now, and one of them is a family farm, and they have been super open and engaged and ready to try with us. And I love that as scary as blockchain can be, that our values are attracting individual land stewards that want to work with us and kind of stretch their, you know, stretch their knowledge and understanding. So there's a spectrum there, and we're wanting to work with everyone.
Curtis.
Yep.
Curtis,
thank you for having me on. This is a good time for me to hop in because my question is, and right now I'm on my little break here at the Paris Natural Farms here in Paris, Texas, where they sell produce at the farmer's market. And we have a farm going, got livestock. We have a lot of tools here that you know, would be very applicable to, you know, making methodology research and stuff like that. And, you know, I feel like I'm at like almost like the end of the line here, like where, you know, when it comes down to it, there's got to be like a some sort of like ease of access and maybe like a simpler, you know, a simple UI or a way to have people adopt the blockchain very easily and effectively and also when you're talking about credit issuance, you know, making that in like an economy through that. You know, I've had a lot of ideas on how, you know, these eco credits can, especially when projects like here, like the land stewards, and then having someone being able to like offer help regarding credit issuance and then using those credits for and profit income and stuff like that. So I don't know, you know, if you my question is, are y'all thinking about how far along do you think about how ease of access and like kind of like the you know, you're talking about open source stuff, you know, I just, you know, some people aren't technically savvy and they don't know really where to go. And is there a way, do you have like some sort of idea of where you could go from there, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's a few threads here. You know, I mean, just building on our project developer conversation and question that Seb was just talking about, you know, in terms of ease of access and usability and really being able to understand how to use a methodology, how to use a credit class, so on and so forth. You know, oftentimes the project developer is really helpful in working with land stewards and working with earth stewards to really educate them or, you know, take on being that point person that's really diving in. And so, you know, hopefully in terms of ease of access, like over time, we could really make it easy to outline like how you're implementing these practices, how you're measuring them, how you're uploading data, so on and so forth, to make it more accessible for land stewards that might not have the time or resources to hire on a project developer. So, you know, there's kind of that thread. And then in terms of ease of access to use our platform, you know, that's something that we're really focused on with our interface design, of making it very simple for people that are not Web3 native to be able to engage in using Regen Ledger to, you know, upload data, change their project profile, you know, tell the story around their project, get credits issued to them, be able to sell them on our marketplace, or, you know, transfer them to, you know, other folks in our ecosystem. So it's definitely something that we're thinking about, and I would definitely separate it into kind of the more implementation focused accessibility and really understanding what our mission is, how to engage in adopting these regenerative practices and measure them, and then, you know, how we're educating people on the blockchain and how we're really making it easy for people to use our platform without really having to know what's going on underneath the hood.
And I feel like a key partner in that for you to know of, Curtis, is Regen Foundation and their work to really improve kind of digital literacy and access. That is like a main tenet of their work and something that we collaborate closely with them on. So it's like the goal is lofty, but it really is about accessibility on multiple levels. So thanks for surfacing that. I think that Timo, I saw that you had requested earlier and then pop back on again. So I knew you've been patiently waiting. Why don't we get a Timo question rolling? And then after, while he's connecting after that, then let's have Carbon Captors up for a question. It looks like we've got about 9 minutes left. Timo, go for it.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Great work as usual. Two questions. One, in the library.regen.network, all the VCS methodologies, are those going to go away now with the Vera announcement? That's number one. And then number two, anybody besides Ned working on a stewardship methodology? Thank you.
Yeah, good question. So in terms of the Vera stuff, I mean, I think that there's two threads. One is that, you know, that there's all these tokenization of existing Vera credits into the blockchain ecosystem, which obviously is kind of on pause right now as Vera starts to work through what they'd like to see in that process. In terms of being able to use Vera methodologies, though, you know, that we would really like to see the use of those methodologies in our ecosystem. And so essentially what that process looks like is, you know, Vera doesn't necessarily have intellectual property rights to all their methodologies. The methodology developer, which is often a third party, actually has rights to use or to, you know, grant rights to use that methodology or create derivatives of it. And so we actually have two projects right now that are looking to use Vera methodologies to produce, you know, credits in the regen ecosystem that are not VCUs. They want to set their own standards. They want to make some upgrades to the methodology. They really want to be able to use the good work that these groups have done on the science front and deploy them in a Web3 native ecosystem. And so, yeah, I mean, the tokenization is obviously paused right now, but to be able to use Vera methodologies, that's definitely something folks are interested in and are actively working on. And
I can take that second question. Yeah. If that's, yeah. So other stewardship projects. So for folks in the audience, what TMO means is a practice-based instead of an outcome or carbon-based methodology. So one where you're rewarding based on regenerative practices. And we have an initiative with through R&D Science called the Environmental Stewardship, something to totally connect on Twitter with me about if you'd like to get involved. But there is a draft methodology that's available right now that we're working on for, that Ned's working on with Fibershed for sheep grazing and vineyard systems. Some of the others that are exploring practice-based methods include regenerative cotton in India with co-ops of smallholder farmers, particularly women. And another is with a group out of Cambodia looking at conservation ag practices and kind of a tiered point system for no-till and crop rotation, cover crops and whatnot. So it looks like there are quite a bit of opportunities moving. There's also another one with smallholders in Tanzania, Malawi, and Rwanda that's interested. And that's, again, with conservation ag practices. So it seems like there's a lot of engagement, I think, not to our surprise, because it's such a cool idea. But those are some of the others that are moving, Timo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I see Ishmael out there, and ERA Brazil is actually working on another one focused on keystone species protection. And so that also falls under kind of the lens of environmental stewardship, where you know, we're you know, they're really focused on protecting keystone species such as jaguars, and it is very much an environmental stewardship because it's focused on improving, you know, or adopting practices that help protect these species, and then rewarding people for, you know, the success of implementation of those practices and the amount of data they collect. So, you know, if you're putting bells on your cows or putting up fences to protect your cattle from jaguars to train them to not go in that area, you know, that's very much kind of an environmental stewardship practice where you're just focused on the practice and then collecting data like, you know, camera traps or, you know, jaguar collars or whatever else it might be to measure the success of those practices. Cool. Carbon captures. Do you guys have a question?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you for hosting space. I'm David from Carbon Captures. Yeah, I have a question, I guess, in terms of what you were discussing earlier, Sam, in terms of the modularity of your approach to decentralized MRV. And if, because what we're doing basically is just targeting CDR, right? So our whole goal is to bring the future credits of, you know, the deep tech, the hard tech, the ocean-based solutions, and, you know, helping all those startups that are working on the science, on the implementation, the scale, to bring, you know, the removal credits of tomorrow, right? I was wondering if that modularity that you just described, I guess, could also be applied to those. Have you thought about expanding or collaborating in that space?
Do you want to expand a little bit more on what you mean by expanding the space?
Yeah, basically, you guys, region, you support land-based solutions, right? The farmers and helping them with the best practices and methodologies to, you know, one of your core missions is to bring, help them bring the eco credits, right? And build those eco credits. What I'm thinking is, if there is a collaboration approach there, to use sort of the same framework, but to help the startups that are working on mineralization and enhanced weathering and, you know, in biomass burial, you know, all those things that are kind of out there in the tech stack that are going to be used and needed in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now. But basically our goal is to help them, and, you know, unlocking that MRV part is definitely part of our solution. So I'm just wondering how, if you've thought about it in that regard, like kind of expanding to those other spaces.
Yeah, so right now we have some, you know, some biochar and enhanced rock weathering methodologies in our pipeline. One is with, they were previously Future Forest Company, and now it's Undone Carbon, has already developed the enhanced rock weathering methodology. And, you know, are implementing kind of a model for those practices. But I mean, yeah, in terms of opening it up, we really do hope to leverage the, you know, kind of modularity of methodologies and credit classes to allow, you know, people to kind of design, you know, their own standards. And as it relates to, you know, monitoring service providers or people working on the MRV components of it, in you know, designing these methodologies, there could be a variety of different implementations and people that are offering services to work on those. So, you know, we really do hope to kind of see that pretty quickly get worked into our ecosystem. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, brilliant. I will probably reach out to you afterwards so we can continue this offline. Yeah, awesome. Great. Thank you.
All right. I know that we're at the top of the hour. Really appreciate anyone who's come. I'm happy to stay on for another 10 or so minutes in case anyone else has other questions. But yeah, again, really appreciate, you know, those in the audience that showed up. We're super excited to share more about our registry. And as always, please reach out on Twitter or via email if you guys want to learn more about what we're up to.
Yep, yep. Staying on if there's anybody else. But thanks for joining, everybody.
I just had one more question, maybe a couple. How does a land steward determine whether or not a methodology currently exists for their situation? And if it does exist, what is the first step for them to plug into that?
Nice, great question. So on the Gitbook library, .region.network, there is a methodology library landing page. And eventually that will be populated with the methodologies that are go through the review process and are openly available to use. And so one of the steps would be to see of those methodologies in that library, what is a fit? And again, back to the methodology versus credit class, that's a fit based on ecosystem and production system, not necessarily based on, you know, like particular eligibility requirements. But they would also be kind of reviewing credit classes as well, like finding that fit. The other space to be able to shop around is Built on Regen. And Built on Regen is a new initiative that we have. It's a public Notion space, and it's meant to showcase the work that's being done from R&D community members and our team. And part of it is a section on methodology developers and seeing the ones that are currently developing or have developed, so that if a land steward were to reach out, let's say in like agroforestry, and we don't yet have an agroforestry approved methodology, they could look in there and they could see, oh, like this one's moving, like this should be ready at this point in time, and kind of plan accordingly. And then to your second question about what to do once they've identified that, really, if they're going to be developing projects on their own, it's to work through the document stuff. So a project plan, which outlines the project activities and the methodology and credit clause that's going to be utilized, and then signing necessary contracts, and then baselining. So those are kind of the steps involved once the methodology is selected. So in certain circumstances, a project developer would be helping. We might see like methodology developers working closely with land stewards in the first pilot versions of them. But that's how that will work.
Thank you for that. That is super helpful. So last question. I have connections to a number of coffee farmers in South America through a partner of mine, Dorina, and they are, you know, really curious about plugging into some of these methodologies. Sam, I think you mentioned the coffee-based agroforestry methodology is kind of being in development currently. Is that so? This would be kind of where I direct them. Is that already somewhere I can direct them?
So like Becca mentioned, if you go to our Built on Regen page, you should be able to see some of the methodologies that are in development. And I think if you go to just the Regen Network Twitter page and scroll down, I'm pretty sure that we have our Built on Regen page somewhere in there. Otherwise, I can share offline that website or retweet it. But there, if you go to the Courageous Lands Agroforestry Method, you can see what methodology they're developing. That's the one that's focused on coffee-based agroforestry systems. And right now, they're kind of in the stage of developing the methodology. They did a really amazing job collecting a bunch of data and generating a kind of early monitoring report to not only help guide the methodology development, but also just assess like feasibility of how difficult or easy it is to implement the method that they were going to be designing. So definitely check out that page and direct them there. And those folks' contacts should be on that page as well if you want to reach out directly.
An add-on to that would be the four folks that are interested in supporting like a methodology idea or like really deeply collaborating on something that has yet to be created. We are organizing co-working groups on a social platform called Hilo that's like clean and simple and allows for people to meet and co-work around something. So we've got one on like land rehydration in semi-arid areas. That's where the environmental stewardship, the practice-based group is meeting. So in certain cases, let's say if we didn't have like a coffee agroforestry, we'd be kind of like coalescing people in these groups to connect. So that's something else. I think that we had another. Does that answer your question, Seb?
Yes, it does. Thank you, guys. This is awesome. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining. I think we had somebody else pop up. Yeah, Sam?
Yeah, I think they might have popped off, though. Again, want to be respectful of people's time, but maybe inviting anyone else from the audience. We could probably take one more question before. He's back. Hi, Juan. Do you have a question?
So I don't know if you can hear me, but basically I'm here working in Guatemala, working several agroforestry projects, and there's a particular project that I would like to know how it could fit into what Regen Network is doing. Basically working, they have a big reserve, over 1,000 hectares, and they have one of the last populations of spider monkeys, if not the last one, in the southern coast of Guatemala. And they're very willing and trying to figure out solutions to protect the space. So just figuring out what methodology, what process, how we could find out what we could do with Regen Network, basically with the space. So they have coffee, they have cacao in the adjacent areas, and then they have this big reserve. So kind of just seeing what we could do. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Like we were just mentioning to Sev, you know, I think this is like a really good opportunity to, you know, reach out to the folks developing the agroforestry methodology for you know, kind of pan-tropical ecosystems and seeing, you know, like how they're thinking about it, how they're designing it. And I know that, you know, from my own personal experience as well, in the methodology development process, it's really important to have people reach out with their use cases such that you can really make sure that you're taking that into consideration when you're designing the method. So I think that that, you know, that would be a good first step. And I'm in terms of, you know, the species protection, I was wondering, Ishmael, if you would want to come on and share a little bit about, you know, kind of your guys' work and if it makes sense. And if not, I can take a crack at it. I think I invited you to speak. Well, maybe not. But yeah, so, you know, in terms of kind of...
Oh, here they are, Sam. Yeah.
Hey, Ishmael.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, thanks for hopping on. I was wondering if you'd mind sharing a little bit about your work, because it sounds like there's some alignment here.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we're developing here in Brazil a methodology to address the needs of keystone species. And what you mentioned right now about the spider monkeys sounds like a situation that could be similar to what we're trying to apply here to protect the jaguar. And the methodology, it's a stewardship-based methodology to help landowners and land stewards to progressively, over time, improve the habitat area for different species, keystone species. And yeah, we should definitely keep in touch and learn more about your project. And I'd be happy to discuss and see how we could point to different solutions that we found and share information, because I think that's mostly, you know, very important, because we're all trying to approach similar problems and find some viable solutions for the future and for regeneration. So really great to meet you, Juan, and thank you everyone so much for all the work you're doing.
Yeah, thanks so much, and thanks for sharing. And yeah, the, you know, Ishmael and the ERA Brazil folks also have a really great built on regen page. So definitely check it out. We're 10 past, and I think that it's time for us to go about our days and want to be respectful of everyone else's time. So thanks again, everyone, for joining. We really appreciate you joining in for a little bit. Thanks again to all those who asked questions. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, big time. Thanks, everybody. Great to hear your voices, and thanks for showing up. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Regenerati News Hour, Regen Registry, and Science Team AMA, recorded on Thursday, June 9th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support.
When we blow through the dust, volcanoes erupt. No one ever guessed that the game would be tough. Keep your hands off when the play is a bust. Plain old and just, so we keep it on the one. Blast off on the two, help me see the three. Third eye open wide, checking out the scene. Laser beam focus, Starscream jokers. Living off the fat of the people they approach. Tell me what happens when the land fights back. With the cliffs at our backs, make the last stand matter. No one ever planned for the famine on deck. We was walking all erect with a dead man's swagger. Sitting in a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. In a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next bill. No one gave a shit till the drugs all dried up. Everybody died from a bad batch of Lysol, but it didn't matter. We was all hyped up when the pedal lit the metal. He just didn't have the right skill. Watched in the daytime till the night curfew. Rats in a cage till they make time to murk you. Got a little job that falls under my purview. We gotta get this mob away from the
the bird's view. Gotta find cover, wipe off the bird poop, write off the work while you try on the worst juice. Blinded by perps who try to reverse truth, slide like Fox News just trying to lie to you. Eating up the slop like a bunch of hungry vagrants. I can't wait for the day they lock us up in stasis. Mock up a basement, could call me resilient. Waiting for the internet to make me a billion. Then envision in the middle men, listen to the fiddle man, play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion.
Imagine a world in which an old dying man's last dying wish is fulfilled.
Alexa, can you play that one C-Fi space where he clowned all the Safe Moon and XRP bag holders and then told everyone to buy Luna because it was going to 1,000?
I'm confused why we're not talking about the fact that you can easily, like, 300x your money on XRP. Like,
you know, son, I remember a time. Alexa, enough. I'm trying to reminisce now. I remember a time before Terra Spaces existed, when things that were said on random Twitter spaces would just get lost to the proverbial black hole of time.
That's the best bet.
Why isn't Luna in wind turbines?
Hey, guys,
I'm reading all about these wind
guys,
turbines.
Guys, do you mind if I explain Cardano a little bit? Because I've been in Cardano since like 2018 and I can give you a full breakdown.
Just when you thought it was safe to shill shitcoins.
Oh my god, you guys, I don't know what to do. So much blood. It's so red.
From the creators of Your Exit Liquidity, in association with We All Love to Hear Ourselves Talk, Inc. For more information, go to terraspaces.org/donate. Spaces.